Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Tuesday, August 21st. And today we're going to check with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're going to take a look at the newspapers, or the front pages, I should say, of the newspapers. There's a lot of stuff going on. A very interesting piece that Bill wrote about Hispanics under President Trump. Hispanics are progressing under President Trump. You wouldn't believe it by watching the media, but they really are. There's a very sad story coming out of South Africa. I mean, just there's a race war about to happen there, and a lot of people are going to get killed. Hopefully, that gets a little coverage. In North Carolina, a bunch of people decided that they don't like statues, so they just brought it down. I mean, that's I don't know what to call that. I thought they used to call that vandalism at one time. Trump versus Mueller. That is getting hotter every single day. I'm beginning to think that Mr. Mueller should do an update and tell the country what is going on. I think he hurts himself with so much secrecy. The Manafort trial now on his fourth day, what is going on there? There's no verdict. I would have expected one by now. The city of Chicago is just another problem. We've talked about it before, but now the mayor got involved, actually said something that made sense, but he's getting a lot of flack from many Democrats in that city. Governor Cuomo of the state of New York stepped on it, as they like to say here in Texas, and I'm sure Bill can tell us a little bit about that. And Keith Ellison, probably the poster boy for double standards in the Democrat Party. I mean, just a total disgrace, not because of his problems with women. I have a lot of problems with him on lots of other places, like his attitude toward the police and all of that. But this situation with women is one that it just really shows the hypocrisy of the Democrat Party. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, it's August. You always tell us that the psychiatrists are on vacation, but you wouldn't know it by the front pages, Bill.
No, you wouldn't. I wrote something about that last night, it being August, and that people should notice the fact that every minor news story lasts 3 days because they have to fill those pages. You know,
right.
So I think I wrote that, on the first day they'd report that a button fell off President Trump's jacket. On the second day they'd report that they found it and it was sent to the FBI lab for analysis. And on the third day they would report that President Trump ordered a new button but insisted that it be made in the USA. And on the fourth day he made a speech appraising foreign tailors because they were angry over the third day's message. this is what we're getting. Getting a lot of padding in the news, a lot of really non-stories or semi-stories. But what is going on, and I think it's absolutely fascinating, is the fact that the country, on the one hand, usually in the first election after a presidential election, will vote for the other party for Congress, and I think that may very well happen this time. But yet there is obviously a backlash against the sheer mm-hmm. hatred of President Trump that you see expressed on these, another one last night on another reward show.
Oh, yes, amazing.
Award show on television, making vile comments about the President of the United States. I think, frankly, that Mr. Brennan has gotten his 15 minutes. I think Trump made a terrible mistake, by the way, by lifting his security clearance. Not that it wasn't deserved, but he didn't need this fight. It's not necessary. And it's opened up a whole can of worms about security clearances. But I do think that the country overall is doing very, very well. And mm-hmm. I'm hoping that people will recognize that, even if the press doesn't want us to.
Right. You kind of get the feeling, Bill, when you're watching the country, and your article about Hispanics is a good example of that. You kind of get the feeling that there's two audiences in the country. There's an audience that simply cannot get enough bashing of Trump, like we saw. I didn't see it, but I've heard about this program on television last night, which, by the way, they're they're losing ratings like crazy. Something yes. I don't know when these people are. I don't understand how a business can lose ratings constantly and not do something about it. But I guess that's another topic. But it seems like there's two audiences. You've got that audience that has to criticize Trump 24/7, and then you have what I believe is a larger audience of people who are just getting up every day, going to work, doing their business, and they've tuned out all this crazy stuff. And that's how you get stories like the one today about Hispanics that you posted. Here's a group doing fairly well, but you wouldn't know it by watching Jorge Ramos. I mean, if you watch Jorge Ramos, everybody hates Trump, and yet a lot of these people apparently are doing quite well on the Trump bill.
Yes, and the numbers in terms of polls of people in minority communities supporting the president are rising. They're not anywhere near a majority yet, and they probably won't reach that level. But there was one recent poll taken by Rasmussen that said that Trump had 35% support in the black community, which would be enormous for a Republican president.
Mm-hmm.
There was a recent poll that showed that Hispanic support rose 10% for the president. Now, how far that goes, I don't know, because the leaders of these communities are almost monolithic in their
mm-hmm.
opposition to the president. The newspapers in these communities are monolithic, and that has to count for something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that as people feel that they're getting better jobs and higher wages and that their prospects look better, they have to notice it. They really have to notice it.
Yes. And I think they do, Bill. And that's why I think your my analogy of the two audiences, or my story about the two audiences, because there does seem to be a disconnect between what you read in the front pages every day or the issues on the front pages every day and the rest of the country. I mean, I kind of get the feeling you were talking about 2018. I've come to the conclusion that nobody really knows what's going to happen in November, because you read one story and there's a blue wave. You read another story and there's no blue wave. So I've come to the conclusion that I'll wait till Election Day and then I'll tell you what happened, Bill, because nobody seems to know. But I wouldn't be surprised if the experts turned out to be wrong again, Bill.
I imagine that they will be. The polling has not changed really since the 2016 election, at least not from what I can see. Trump is actually not doing badly in the polls. He's not doing great, but he is actually pretty much up there with where Obama was at this point in his presidency.
Mm-hmm.
The analysts tell us that the House will probably flip to the Democrats. That may happen. It may happen. They only need about 25 votes. That's not very many in the first off-year election after a presidential election, and it may happen. And what concerns me is not what they will do to legislation, because the Senate will be there, and it's highly unlikely the Senate will flip. And the president will be there to veto anything, but it will deadlock Congress. And I have no doubt that if the Democrats do take the House, that they will impeach the president, because that is what the Congressional Black Caucus wants. It is for the fringe of the party. There will be no basis for it, but they don't need a basis for it. They can do it on any basis they want. And, of course, it will be the dream of the television networks to cover an impeachment trial of the president they don't like. It will just stop progress. And it may even have an effect on the economy. And it is hard to predict, really, with any level of certainty, what's going to happen 2 years from now when we have another presidential election. It will be 2 years from now.
Yeah,
in 2020. There do not seem to be on the Democratic side candidates who have anywhere near the stature to be president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And they will probably manufacture one, just as they manufactured Obama. And apparently the talk right now, and it's she's the flavor of the month, is Kamala Harris. Next month there'll be another flavor, but you have a party in disarray, the Democratic Party, that really isn't a political party anymore. It's really kind of a business,
mm-hmm.
and you have a Republican Party that does not particularly love Trump, but I don't see anyone who's going to challenge Trump successfully in the Republican Party.
No, I don't either. I mean, there's some talk about the governor of Ohio, but I would hope that if he has any ambitions, real ambitions, I would hope that he waits until 2024 and runs for president then. Kasich is actually a pretty good guy. I like Kasich a lot, but
yeah.
I think it would do him well to wait till till 2024 and let Trump have an easy reelection. Well, a lot of things going on, Bill, that I wanted to touch base. Some of these stories are just fascinating. South Africa, I wanted to talk about that a little bit. South Africa, of course, 20, 25 years ago was the story of the day, apartheid. And now in South Africa, you're seeing something dreadful. They're apparently going to go after the white farmers and take their land away. Apparently the story, to put it in context, they're offering money for the land, but they're not offering enough. So they're going to say, okay, take it, or we'll take the money, or we're going to take the land from you. It could result in people being killed, as I understand it. I would love to see what Mandela thinks of this, because I don't think this is what we were told was going to happen in South Africa. We were basically going to be told that it would be peace and harmony. That's not what we have there, Bill.
No, you have a black radical government. You have a country in disarray. The condition of South Africa is terrible. Again, no reporting. Once apartheid was taken care of, that was the end of the story as far as the left-wing press is concerned. And I have a feeling that the appropriation of land by the government, land that is owned by whites, will be approved of in much of the Western press, and there will not be much of a protest over it. They're basically killing themselves because these, what they call white settlers, I don't know, why is a person a settler? Who comes to a country and makes a contribution to that country, and a person comes across a border in the United States illegally, he's an immigrant. You know, I don't, there's something wrong with that language.
Right.
But I think South Africa is just fading away. It's an absolute disgrace. The condition of women in South Africa is a disgrace. I understand that when people go to Johannesburg, there are signs up in hotels saying, please don't go out at night because it's too dangerous. And yet, no reporting of any kind. No reporting of any kind.
It's dreadful. It's dreadful. And what is really amazing to me is, these white South Africans, whatever the people want to call them, they've actually been there about as long as white Americans have been in the United States. I mean, South Africa was settled in the 18th century by the English or the Dutch, whatever. Whatever it was, these people don't consider themselves Europeans. They consider themselves South Africans. This is their country. This is their land. They have generations that they have lived there. And I certainly didn't support apartheid. I thought it was the wrong policy. But I don't see how this is fixing anything. And it's dreadful to me that whenever you have a government that cannot govern, they immediately go to either the race card or the ethnic card. I mean, the problem in South Africa is that the people running the place have made a mess out of the place. It's not the white farmers' fault. It's the majority running the government, Bill.
That's exactly right. And what people don't realize about the South African government is it basically is a communist government. Mm-hmm. It's on the old communist model. It's not creating any progress for the people of South Africa. And yet they know that they have defenders in the Western press, defenders in the West, who will not call them out on what they're doing. There are other countries in Africa making much more progress.
That's right. That's exactly right. They're doing a heck of a lot better. We just hope that works out. There was an incident in North Carolina, Bill, last night at the university where a bunch of people took down a statue. At one time, we called that vandalism, Bill, and now all of a sudden...
And rioting.
People, rioting. They come into a campus, they break down a statue, and I don't know, where's the police? Where's the administration of this place? If I'm the parent and my son or daughter is in that school, I'm beginning to wonder whether that check I'm writing is something I should keep doing, Bill.
Well, it's interesting that the chancellor of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where the incident took place, Carol Fault, has just issued a statement condemning the rioters.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying, and I have the quote up here, "The monument has been divisive for years, and its presence has been a source of frustration for many people, not only on our campus, but throughout the community. However, last night's actions were unlawful and dangerous, and we are very fortunate that no one was injured." It's a mild rebuke. It isn't a great rebuke. My feeling is that any student who participated should be expelled. I mean, if you can expel a student over a charge of sexual misconduct without any evidence being presented, you certainly can expel a student over rioting. But again, we're gonna see the double and triple standards taking place, and probably nothing will happen.
Nothing will happen, but nothing will happen, but things will happen because people are going to get angrier and angrier at these administrators. I think there's a sense in the country, Bill, and this is just my sense. Maybe you disagree with me, but there's a sense in the country. I kind of pick it up when I'm talking to people. People are saying, okay, fine. I don't support slavery, but that happened 160 years ago. Let's deal with today's problems and not continue to relive the past. I mean, yes, if you want to take down the statue, there's probably a legal way to do it. Go through the administration and say that the statue is offensive, or you can put next to the statue a sign that says, well, let's put this in context, this statue. But the idea that, you know, because I didn't like what happened in the past, I'm going to bring down statues or make life miserable for people that had nothing to do with what happened in the past, I don't think that goes well in the country. That goes over well in the country, Bill.
I think that the country, in the end, has a sense of fairness and a sense of propriety. And it may not come out immediately. It may take a while. It may even take decades. But eventually, I think the decent people do rise up and say, we cannot accept this. And I do believe that has got to happen. It really does. It won't happen in the colleges because they're under the control of the far left. But I think nationally it may happen. You know, the parties are now very closely divided in terms of national popularity, but the Republican Party has most of the positions. And I think if the Democratic Party does not condemn things like this and continues to either remain silent or support actions of this kind, that they may fade away as a party. In fact, I'm very surprised that there has not been a third party movement in the last few years on the left to, you know, a responsible progressive movement, a responsible liberal movement. I think that if the current leadership of the Democratic Party falters, and I believe it will eventually, that there will be that party. I hope there is.
Well, I hope so, too, because I don't see how any reasonable person can defend taking down a statue like this. I just don't see how anybody can defend it. Again, you can disagree. I mean, look, if somebody put up a statue of Che Guevara, I would probably write a letter to the administrator and say, you know, I think you may want to reconsider that. But I wouldn't join a mob at 2 o'clock in the morning to bring down the statue because I would consider that wrong. And that's what is happening here. I mean, I know that I have participated, and one of them was actually very successful in removing from Walmart some references to Che Guevara that they had. They were selling T-shirts or something with his picture on it. They thought it was Jim Morrison. They didn't know it was Che Guevara. Yeah, I mean, they're so confused. They don't even know who the guy is. But, I mean, we used letters and we used persuasion, and I remember thousands of people signing that letter, and it worked. We were able to get it done. But that's the way you do it. You know, you don't walk into Walmart and shut down the place or interfere with people who are going there to shop, Bill.
That's right. And we're finding increasingly this happening. There are very similar incidents happening every day in Chicago where you have rioters, and that's exactly what they are, invading what's known as the Miracle Mile, which is an affluent shopping area of Chicago, and basically intimidating customers, intimidating tourists, making it impossible for people to go out on the street. It is just wrong. It doesn't matter what your cause is. This isn't going to bring them any success in their cause. It's just going to bring them contempt. And yet you find very few political figures willing to denounce what is happening.
Well, to me, that is the great opportunity in the Democratic Party. I mean, if they want somebody to stand up to Trump in 2020, that to me, this is the kind of opportunity that is right there for a Democrat to get up and say, hey, look, this is not how we do it. This kind of behavior is unacceptable. And if you're doing that, you're not a Democrat. You're not a liberal. You're whatever you are. And this is a great opportunity. It surprises me that there's not a Democrat out there. The fellow who's running for the Senate in Tennessee, the governor of Tennessee, who I understand is a centrist Democrat who may win that seat, pretty popular guy. Joe Manchin in West Virginia, the new governor in Louisiana was a pretty conservative guy too, Democrat. Those are the people I think that should be standing up and saying, this is unacceptable. My party shouldn't be identified with this. I think that could open up some presidential doors, Bill.
It possibly could, and I wish that would happen too. There are still a number, as you said, of moderate Democrats left. There are, I think, more than the press is letting on to, who are fed up with this. And you, of course, you find elders in the party who are fed up with it. I can't believe, for example, that Steny Hoyer approves of this kind of thing. I think there are probably many members of the Senate who are appalled. But one of the things you have in many of these cases is you have a racial factor, and that makes it impossible for the Democratic Party to address.
You're exactly right, and it's almost as if they're afraid of being called a racist. As we will talk, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Chicago, because I think you're seeing some of that in Chicago, where the mayor, I thought, made some interesting remarks, and he's being called a whole bunch of names by people. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos, and then we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guerrero Harpy. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have all of that on the show description. If you look under the show description where you see a link to Bill Katz Urgent Agenda, underneath that you will see a link to Carlos and his schedule. Bill, before we talk about Chicago and Keith Ellison and what's happening in the Democrat Party and Governor Cuomo, I wanted to bring up a couple of, as well as Mueller and President Trump. Before we talk about that, I want to just bring up a couple of historical points on this day in history. In 1959, something that I'm sure you remember, the state of Hawaii became number 50, the number, I guess, 50th of 50 states. It was the last state to go in. And I think you have memories of that. I'd be curious to hear them, Bill.
I remember very specifically reading about it in a newspaper. We actually did get our news from newspapers then. We got it from television as well. But newspapers, I remember going into what we used to call a luncheonette or a candy store, and they had their little newspaper stand, and there was a big headline in Newsday, which was our local paper out on Long Island, something to the effect that Hawaii becomes the 50th state. It was a remarkable moment because it followed by a very short period of time Alaska coming in, and these are two states, in fact the only two states, that are not contiguous with the continental United States. And when you think of Hawaii, you think of a country that, a state, most of whose residents don't look like most Americans, and yet they were accepted warmly and happily by most Americans. And when you think of Alaska, you think of a state that most Americans will probably never visit. And they were accepted warmly. I think they both made important contributions to the country.
Sure.
Of course, Hawaii was very symbolic to Americans because it's where Pearl Harbor was located, and that is where World War II began. Alaska actually had less of an identity. But it was a huge area. I believe it is physically the largest state. A lot of oil reserves, a small population. But I think making it a state was exactly right. And it does indeed create complications for the Defense Department because they have to defend it as a state. But that is something we have taken on. And there are some other areas that the United States controls which have been mentioned as possible states. Puerto Rico comes up all the time. People of Puerto Rico usually vote to turn that down, because if it became a state, they would have to be completely self-sufficient and they would have to pay federal taxes. They don't pay federal taxes now. Another area that I've heard mentioned occasionally is Guam. I doubt if that will become a state. I think they like their present situation. But, when you think of Alaska and Hawaii and how different they were from the states that were already in the Union, America is really a remarkably diverse society, and was before the word diversity became popular.
That's right. And, of course, Hawaii gave us Elvis's Blue Hawaii and that great television show Hawaii Five-0, who's one of the most popular shows, as I recall, back in the 60s and 70s. Popular.
And gave us entertainers like Bruce Ho and Holly Loki on Arthur Godfrey, and it gave us Maui Jim sunglasses,
that's
which I happen to wear. So it's
that's right. Big contributions from Hawaii. Beautiful. It also, I think, whether they were thinking about this or not, Bill, but it also gave Americans a beautiful resort that they could go to without a passport. I mean, if you think of places you can go for the beach, most places you have to bring a passport. But Hawaii is this beautiful destination where you can fly to without a passport. You just take literally a domestic flight, even though you're flying over the Pacific. It is a domestic flight. Something else, too, that happened on this day that we can briefly recall, and when I read this stuff, it almost makes me feel like it's old, ancient history, but the Soviet Union went into Czechoslovakia on this day in 1968, and I remember that quite well. And it just seems like, you know, so much has happened since. The Soviet Union doesn't exist. We now talk about socialism in endearing and charming ways, but this is the kind of story that we should ask your little queen there from the Bronx to talk about, Bill.
Well, our little queen from the Bronx is having her own problems right now.
Yes.
Because she had a town hall meeting last week and wouldn't let the press in. And now every time she opens her mouth, she now says, well, we wanted a safe space for our citizens to express themselves. Now, when you say to journalists that they're a threat to somebody by covering the meeting, this doesn't make it too popular. I think little Evita is really going to be in for it when she gets to Congress, where they already dislike her. And it's too bad because she's not a bad person. She really isn't. She's actually quite an intelligent young woman, but she is way unprepared for the role that they've given her, which is kind of a national spokeswoman for the new generation. You know, because you talk about what she might have thought of the Soviet Union. I think she probably thought the Soviet Union was a union of boilermakers or something like that, or maybe they made Soviets. Yeah, they
That's
made
right.
Soviets. That's what they did. I mean, she's so uninformed, and you've got to know the territory. But the Soviet Union, you know, Nixon arranged for what he called the détente policy involving the Soviet Union, and there were, it is true, very few Americans who ever thought they'd see the end of the Soviet Union. But there
I was one of them. I was one of them, Bill.
But there was one who didn't believe that, who believed it would come to an end. His name was Ronald Reagan.
Exactly. No, I have to confess, I thought they would go on a lot longer than it did, but I think Reagan understood that it was a bad system, that that it would eventually collapse, and he turned out to be right, Bill, 100% right.
Yes, and he not only did he turn out to be right philosophically, he knew that when he became president, he had to do something to make it happen. No, there's
That's right.
a mechanism of progress. And that is another area where the Democratic Party really falls down. They don't seem to know how to do anything anymore. You know, you get power, you have to know how to use it. When Giuliani became mayor of New York, he said, this crime has got to stop. And he knew that he had to have a mechanism to stop it, not just talk about it and go to churches and make nice speeches. And he brought in the best people in policing that he could find. He used the most modern methods. And under him and his successor, Mike Bloomberg, the murder rate in New York went down 80%. And yet he was given no credit for it by the communities that were most benefited from the reduction because their leaders didn't benefit from it, which is what often, sadly, causes are about. They become causes about what's good for the leaders. But the fact of the matter is that Giuliani was one of the most effective mayors in the history of New York, one of the most respected. You wouldn't think that today because he's a scrappy lawyer today. He's not, in a way, he's like Trump. He's not the most beloved figure as an individual, but he was certainly effective. And
he was.
Very, very much so. And you can ask the question, why is it that New York was largely able to solve its crime problem and Chicago is not? And I think that's a question you never hear asked in the press. I wish it was asked.
Well, and let's talk about Chicago now, because obviously the city had another bad weekend. You know, this is now becoming I was saying to a Mexican friend the other day, we were talking about this, and I said, this is like Juarez. You know, Juarez 10 or 15 years ago, every weekend, you know, they had 10 people killed. And after a while, it became like, you know, well, just like, you know, like nothing. It just, you know, people took it for granted as what happens in Juarez, and look what's happening in Chicago. But the mayor, I thought, made an interesting remark. I don't like the mayor politically, but I thought he put something on the table that should be talked about, and that is what is happening in these communities. And man, was he ever criticized, Bill?
Well, yes, he finally had the courage to say, this is a function, to a degree, of culture. I don't know if he actually used that word, but it attitude.
That's what he was saying.
Yes, he was saying basically the culture of these communities foments violence. It foments silence in the face of crime. Mm-hmm. That if you actually report anybody for committing a crime, it's called snitching. And he said these things have to change. And of course, he was immediately attacked by the black leadership and by all the little cronies that go with them. That I don't think he was called a racist, but they said, well, you're blaming the community, but the actual reason is it lies elsewhere. The problems lie. No, the problems don't lie elsewhere. They lie in the community. And the tragedy of black America is it's so badly led by these phonies who will not address the problem and try to solve it.
That's right. And I think there, you know, I wish that he had said something else too. I said I wish the mayor had expanded on his statement. Maybe he did and I missed it, because it's really black on black crime, and what they're really fighting for is territory. These you know these cartels are kind of fighting for territory. So I mean, I wish he had said something along those lines. I wish he had apologized to the police for the fact that he's been working against them. I mean, the problem in Chicago is the police doesn't want to get involved because they know the judges don't have their backs. So the police
right.
is basically just sitting by saying, well, if you guys want to kill each other, go ahead and do it. We're not going to get involved. And that's a very terrible thing
and
because the victims. But
the
victims are blacks. Blacks are the victims
of
here.
Of course.
Innocent
of course.
Black people.
Well, there have been many policies pursued by black leaders that have hurt black people.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes hurt them severely. We had a movement in the 1960s here in New York for, quote, community control of schools. Apparently, the New York City school system, which was renowned as the best urban school system in the United States, wasn't good enough for the local leaders as the Civil Rights Movement walked on. They wanted community control of schools. Now, what that would do, nobody could quite describe. I mean, the city of New York had the finest school teachers. The standards were so high, and they won their battle for community control of schools. And it did absolutely nothing for the education of black children. It did a lot for the power of black leaders. They got control over patronage. They got control over teacher hiring. And it was finally abandoned in the late 1990s. And when it was abandoned, or actually later, I believe, when it was abandoned, the New York Times, which had supported it, did not run a single retrospective on community control. And one knows why. It was a gross failure. It was only a patronage operation, but it was also one of the operations, one of the causes that destroyed the ACLU, which used to be a pretty good organization. But they got involved and declared community control of schools to be a civil liberty, which is a ridiculous argument. It may or may not be a desirable political goal, but it is not a civil liberty. And about half their members in New York resigned as a result, and I was one of them. But what happens so often with ethnic groups, and it's not only the African-American community but others, is that the leadership comes from the most radical fringe. It comes from the activists, from the people who shout the loudest, and they don't necessarily do what is wise for the people of these communities. You're seeing it here in New York now, again, because New York does not have Giuliani as mayor. It has one Bill de Blasio, who was an admirer of Fidel Castro. And he has brought in a racialist police commissioner, not police commissioner, but schools commissioner. He didn't do it during his first administration. He had to get reelected. But once reelected, he's gone way left. He's brought in a racialist schools administrator, and they are now picking apart the good things about the New York City school system. Tearing down great schools, when I say tearing down, not physically, but by changing rules for admission to these schools, and it's going to be a complete mess. And once again, will black kids benefit? No, of course not. Absolutely not. But the leaders will.
Right. It's almost as if we're going to get segregation back, Bill.
Oh,
de facto
absolutely.
Segregation.
Yeah.
because the inner city schools will be more black or more Hispanic, and the suburban schools will be more white, and more parents are doing homeschooling because they just simply don't want to send their kids to public schools. So in a sense, we've gone full circle from segregation. We've gone from Topeka versus Kansas to where we are now, where the schools are segregated, not officially, but they are. I mean, we see that to some extent in most of our cities. But you were mentioning about the mayor of New York. The governor of New York has been in the news here lately, Bill, and I thought maybe you could give us a report on that. You know him a lot better than I do, but the governor certainly stepped on it, Bill, a few days ago when he made an unbelievably stupid remark, Bill.
He did make a stupid remark. It is the governor of New York is Andrew Cuomo, who was the son of Mario Cuomo, who was also the governor of New York, and he is the brother of Chris Cuomo, who is the neutral political reporter for CNN. Andrew Cuomo, his father was kind of a beloved figure in New York because whether one agreed or disagreed with his policies, he was a very, very eloquent man and a very intelligent man. He really was. Mario Cuomo was a respected figure. And in this case of Andrew, the apple not only fell far from the tree, it rolled down the hill and into the swamp because he is nothing like his father. He doesn't have his father's elegance, his eloquence, or his thoughtfulness. And he made a statement. He was speaking to one of these groups that had a radical contingent. And in speaking to them, he kind of mocked President Trump's slogan, Make America Great Again. And he interjected the phrase, it was never that great to begin with. Well, there were people in that audience who actually applauded that, but there were others who were stunned by it because they immediately recognized the damage that a comment like that can do to a political figure. He tried to walk it back a few days later, but that comment is on tape, and it'll be used against him. Now, he will be reelected in November because the Republican Party in New York is a joke and a farce and a disgrace. But he'll be reelected, but this will come back to haunt him again. There is this fringe in the Democratic Party that really believes America was never a great country, and they want to be served. And he was basically appeasing them by making
right.
that comment.
You kind of get the feeling, Bill, that this is something that is self-destructive behavior
oh, yes.
in the Democrat Party, because it's almost like they have an internal clock. Each of these Democrat leaders has like an internal clock that goes off every 5 minutes as a reminder that it's been 5 minutes since I attacked President Trump. So what can I say now? And you just keep attacking. I mean, it's almost like they have to attack President Trump. I mean, if they're reading from a script, there's like a little asterisk next to it saying, hey, attack President Trump. And they have to keep attacking President Trump. So anything that President Trump says, including Make America Great Again, which I believe other presidents have used in the past. Reagan used it in the campaign, and, you know, happy days are here again. We remember that from the past. It seems like anything that President Trump says, they have to attack. And in the process, they make stupid mistakes like this. I would love to know what his grandfather thinks of that remark, Bill, because his grandfather was an Italian immigrant, as I recall.
Yes.
And came here, and, you know, they came here, and they're the American dream. I mean, if America was never really great again, say that to his grandfather. Of course, he's dead, but I mean, talk about his grandfather. His grandfather
yes.
is the exact contradiction to what he said, Bill.
Of course, and of course, that's the point. And he later did say, in trying to walk it back, he made references to his father, the son of immigrants who became the governor of New York, and of course, America always was great, and we all know that. But it's too late once the words are out of your mouth. You know, it's like somebody saying I hate a particular ethnic group and then trying to walk it back and say, well, I didn't really mean hate. I simply have some legitimate criticisms. You know, it doesn't work. This is out there. I don't know how much effect it will have electorally, because we're about to have a very important midterm election, but it's being fought locally. These are local elections for Congress, for the Senate, and there is a very large component of local interest and local issue building in an election like that. We don't know how the overall tone of the National Democratic Party will affect this election. I can't believe it will be favorable.
No, but of course, if he decides to run for president, like a lot of people do, that's when it'll come back to him. I don't think it'll hurt him that much in the primary. He's running against, a complete wacko of a candidate, Cynthia Nixon. I mean, if we think the little Evita is a problem, this woman is even worse. I mean, this woman doesn't even understand the policy she's presenting, as I understand, Bill.
No, she doesn't understand anything. She has kind of fluffed every comment that she's made. You know, a lot of things with these actresses is they don't seem to understand that they built their careers reading lines written by other people. You know, they think they wrote those lines. They begin to think that, I you know, when I played that part on Sex and the City, that was really me. You know, it was really me.
Right.
No, it was other people wrote the lines. And there are some actors, of course, who are highly intelligent, Reagan being a perfect example, others who have been eloquent. But Cynthia Nixon is a grade B television actress, and she's a radical leftist, and she decided to run against the mayor who is not left-wing enough, she says, which seems to be the main argument of this crowd. And it's the main argument of people like our little Evita, who is being called all kinds of names here in New York, like Che Guevara. I think we talked about this last time.
Yes,
or,
right.
Bolshechik. That's another one.
Yes.
And that does not seem to understand any issue that she's talking about. She will not be welcomed warmly by the Democrats in the House of Representatives, who really think that, you know, you have to wait a little bit of your turn in politics. You have to know something. I remember when Kamala Harris first came to the Senate, her co-Democratic senator from California, Dianne Feinstein, noted the fact that Kamala Harris was already being talked about as a presidential candidate. And Dianne Feinstein said, she just got here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But they can't wait. The Democratic Party is so short of talent that they have this little Evita. And again, we're making jokes. I don't mean to demean her. It's wonderful that a young person is interested in politics, and she's an attractive young woman. She was a very good student at Boston University. So we're kidding her because she's in the opposition. But fine, more power to her to be interested. But for goodness sake, learn the issues before you get into this. And
right.
She's not ready for prime time. Unless it's CNN, which
right. Well, I cannot wait, Bill. We're going to take a little break, but after the break, I want to talk about President Trump and Mueller and Keith Ellison. But I cannot wait for the moment when she's walking down the halls of Congress and some senior Democrat looks at her and says, "Are you the new intern from New York?"
Yes.
I'm sure that's going to go down real well.
That's another thing. Every time she's criticized, she reverts back to those, to the cliches, either the ethnic card or the woman card.
Right.
You know, they wouldn't be saying this if I were somebody else. No, they would be. They would be saying it just as much.
That's right.
And we hope she, quote, evolves, but I don't think it's likely.
Well, not in the near future. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk about President Trump and Keith Ellison and Mr. Mueller and a few other things. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, doing our weekly check of the news with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, speaking of another very controversial Democrat, this is one who I really dislike. I have to be upfront about this. I've never met him, but I dislike him a lot because of a lot of things that he has said. And I don't care about his religion or his liberal views, but this is not a man who I would associate with being the attorney general of anything, Bill.
And that's Keith Ellison.
Yes.
Keith Ellison has a bad... I just pulled my plug here. Keith Ellison has a bad history. He was associated with the Nation of Islam, which is a bigoted, racist organization. He claims that he is no longer associated with that and Louis Farrakhan. There are some indications that he still has some contact. He is a radical leftist in Congress. He almost became the Democratic National Chairman, which tells you something about where the Democratic Party is. The activist base is very far to the left. He lost out to Tom Perez, who's another leftist, very far to the left. And he is now the vice chairman of the Democratic National Party. The Democratic National Party seems to have almost nothing to do with the United States. I mean, it's a kind of a Western, British-style leftist party, and everything in it is about race, gender, and ethnicity, nothing about anything else. It is also becoming a party that is becoming very, very uncomfortable to many moderates, to many people who've supported the party over the years. Now, I do think that they are beginning to speak out in some cases, but I think that Ellison symbolizes what is wrong with the Democratic Party. Now, he's running for Attorney General of Minnesota. He has been a U.S. congressman. He will be succeeded in Congress by a Muslim woman who is militantly anti-Israel and has a very strange immigration record. She divorced her brother, which means she had to marry her brother, apparently to get into the United States, and then divorced him. So we have a...
an interesting case, to say
a very interesting case here, and yet no problem, and no problem with Keith Ellison. Keith Ellison has the endorsement of the Democratic Party, the enthusiastic endorsement. And it's not only his political background that is very disturbing, but he has now has against him serious and credible charges of sexual abuse of a woman. And it's been pointed out that the Democratic senator from Minnesota, that state, Al Franken, facing much less serious charges, had to resign. And people are asking, if he had to resign, why is this man running for attorney general, the chief law enforcement officer of the state, and getting the support of the same party? And I think there are many cans of worms here that are being opened. It's very, very disturbing. It is disturbing to see what that party has become. And yet the American press papers it over.
Right. Well, in the case of this fellow Ellison, I mean, as you say, these are credible charges. Were he a Republican, I guarantee you that this would be 24/7. Chris Cuomo over at CNN would be doing this 24/7. So there's a real double standard here. And I don't think you and I are the only people picking up on this, Bill. This is so obvious, a double standard. I mean, where are the marches? I'd love to see the next women's march if they're going to be calling for his resignation, Bill.
Well, yes. Well, the only group that did call for him to step aside was the National Organization for Women, for which they should be commended.
Okay.
But
yes.
The Democratic I don't know if the Democratic women in the Democratic Party will do anything for him, but they have not said anything against him. And you have these flaming hypocrites in the party, like our senator from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand,
yes,
who has a different opinion on every issue each day. I mean, she is really the political version of Heinz 57 varieties. And she, you know, she wants to be president also. She hasn't said a word. I don't think the other little phonies have said a word, the ones who claim to be so interested in this. Kamala Harris, who claims to be a hot feminist, I don't think has said a word about Keith Ellison. She's a little smarter than some of the others. I think she knows how to maneuver a little bit better. But it's the disgrace is complete. But let's face it, this is a party that gave Bill Clinton a complete pass.
Mm-hmm.
And he had credible rape charges against him.
That's right. No, I think you're right. I think the double standard is unbelievable. It seems interesting to me, Bill, when you read the headlines of the Democrat Party these days, it seems like you never hear about what the candidates have to say or their positions on any issue.
No.
First transgender Democrat, first Muslim.
Yes.
I mean, it's like, isn't there, I mean, when you're voting for people, okay, so the woman or the candidate is a transgender. Tell me what you're going to do about our tax policies. Well, I don't know much about that, but I am the first transgender. Okay. I mean, that seems to be the only thing that matters to these people.
Yes, and you know that the chickens come home to roost on that when people who are not included in that begin to say, what about my group? You know?
Right.
What about my group? On college campuses, you have all these courses, and all the quote, marginalized peoples, I love that phrase,
yes,
you know,
I do too.
Some of whom have full scholarships to Ivy League schools, Right. We should all be so marginalized, get together. But what I don't think is being reported is that many of these groups that presumably get together on college campuses really have very little in common. And there is an assumption made, you've read about it, we've all read about it, that someday America will be a majority-minority country, it won't be many years off, and they will all march off together toward this new utopia that they will build as marginalized peoples. But, you know, these communities have their own interests. And I think it must be very difficult on some college campuses to see all the attention given to one ethnic group, and other ethnic groups are immediately expected to go along and to support them. I think
right.
you're finding an awakening now, which we've noted in a few news stories, of the Asian American community, which is not known for its participation in politics. But I think that the stories that came out about discrimination against Asian students in college admissions has really disturbed them. I think it's really jolted them. And they are recognizing that merit alone is not going to get them what they want, that they're going to have to be politically active. Well, then they're going to run into some of the other minority groups who are competing with them for things like slots in university admissions. And I don't think that this new nirvana that we're told is going to occur, where they are all going to get together, is ever going to actually happen.
That's exactly right. Bill, looking at next week, this week, there's a couple of big stories, the Manafort trial, the president against Mr. Mueller. The Manafort trial is interesting because I thought by now they would have a verdict. It seemed like they had a very strong case against Manafort, but something's happening in the jury. I have no idea what, but I have to think that this is not the way it was supposed to go down, Bill.
No, I think they thought they'd get an easy conviction.
Yes.
But we don't know what's going on. It could be one juror who's a holdout. Or it could be that they're just very thorough. There are some lawyers on who said you have to be very careful about trying to predict what a jury will do. They could feel that Manafort was ganged up on. He has another trial, by the way, coming up. He's been charged with some other things.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think a lot of people wonder is, what the hell does this have to do with Donald Trump?
Yes.
It has nothing to do with Donald Trump. And I think, as you said, there has to be some accounting at some point from the special counsel's office as to what he's doing. You know, going on month after month after month, if they had come up with something serious, we'd know it by now.
Right. Right. No, I think so. And I think it would do him a lot of good, if not directly to the American people, or go over to the Congress and say, look, this is what I'm working on, and this is why it's going on. But it seems to me the more he keeps fishing out there and never coming back with anything, the more difficult that it gets for his credibility. A lot of people are, like you say, what does this have to do with President Trump? The Manafort trial. Every time we watch the news, the former campaign manager of Mr. Trump is on trial. Is that really on trial for anything that has to do with Trump?
Yes. Anything they can do to link him with the president. The original mandate of the special prosecutor was to investigate the possibility of Russian collusion. And and he's gotten into all these other areas. It's not right in a democracy. It's not a healthy way to conduct things. We don't need special prosecutors. The Justice Department is fully capable. And if we do need a special prosecutor, it should be an individual who knows how to keep the smallest profile, not the largest profile. Very dangerous.
Right.
Very, very dangerous.
I think so.
We elect our presidents.
That's exactly right. And I'll just say one last thing about all of this. I supported the original inquiry that Mr. Mueller is heading. And I supported it not so much because I thought the Russians had something to do with the election. I never felt that they really changed anything or that anybody was really involved with them. I wanted to know what was going on because I felt the Russians could be a threat to other countries. And I kind of wanted to know what their tactics were. They could be a threat to the election in Mexico, Colombia, Brazil, Argentina, and so on. That's what I was interested in. What are these guys doing? What are their tactics? But I never thought that this investigation would turn into what it has. And I think Mr. Mueller is in deep trouble right now with the American people, Bill.
I think he is. I think that they don't hate him, but I do think they want answers. They, you know, they elected a president. The president is doing the job. That doesn't mean you have to agree with his policies. That's a perfectly valid discussion. But the message that they're getting, I think, from Mueller and some of the others is, well, we are the ones who will decide who's president, not you, the American people. And I think that is a very, very dangerous message. You know, I've always believed about Watergate. I was no fan of Richard Nixon, just on a general basis. but that Richard Nixon was not brought down by Watergate, in my view. That was the proximate cause. He was really brought down because he was Richard Nixon. They just didn't like him, and the establishment wanted to reprimand the American people for daring to vote for someone that the establishment didn't agree with or didn't like personally. And I really think there's a lot of that in what we're seeing right now.
Right. No, I think you're right about that. And in the end, of course, Nixon didn't help himself with some of the things
that he did.
I mean, I think he contributed to his own downfall significantly, and he admitted that later in many of the things that he wrote. Well, Bill, have a great week. Enjoy yourself. Keep doing the great work at Urgent Agenda. We'll keep checking up on it, and we'll get together on Sunday. How's that?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. I guess it'll be another week without news.
Yes, it'll be another week without news. Maybe we can talk about Hawaii next week.
Or the Brooklyn Dodgers.
The Brooklyn Dodgers. That would be it. By the way, talking to the Brooklyn Dodgers, have you seen when Professor Dershowitz is on television that he's got these little Brooklyn Dodgers figures behind him? I thought that's really cool.
I haven't seen that, but I'm going to look next time.
Yeah, the next time he's on, of course, it depends what office he's talking from, but just recently I saw him on the back, you know, these little baseball figures. There were like 8 or 9 of them. Must have been they were Dodgers, no question about it. I'm sure they were Brooklyn Dodgers because of his background. So I just thought that was kind of cool. I thought maybe the next time you watch the professor, check him out.
I will do it. And I'll talk to you on Sunday.
Thank you so much. Our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, like he said, another week of news. It's amazing how much is happening in this country. It seems like the news just gets more and more complicated every day. It wasn't supposed to be this way. The month of August was supposed to be the month without news. Well, tell that to President Trump. He is certainly knows how to make news. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We'll talk to you later.